You're listening to the PGIM India Insights podcast series by PGIM India Asset Management.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. You're catching me, Ahalya, on another edition of PGIM India Insights. Now, as you know, in this series, investment experts from PGIM India Asset Management share their perspectives on some of the most pressing issues impacting global and domestic markets and how you can prepare your portfolio to benefit from opportunities across markets. On today's podcast, we have a very interesting conversation courtesy Ankit Jain, who's going to be chatting with Vinay Paharia, CIO, PGIM India Mutual Fund. Let's get into it, shall we? Over to you, Ankit.
Thanks, Alia. Happy to be back today, recording the third podcast for, India Insights. Today, I have with me Vinay Paharia, the CIO of PGIM India Mutual Fund, who will be discussing with us the investment process and how portfolios are constructed for the firm. Vinay, you joined PGIM only in the month of Jan 2023, which is this year. And you took over the funds from 1st April 2023. So you've been known all throughout, in the past for process orientation and valuation conscious manager. So what is this process all about?
Hi, Ankit. Thanks for having me on this podcast. So at the outset, I want to highlight that we already have a robust investment process and had a long history of a very strong performance track record. We have practiced investing in growth-oriented companies at a reasonable price. However, incrementally, what we want to do is emphasize more on quality of business, on underlying growth and valuation in the same order of priority. So what we would want to like to buy is into structural growth companies. So instead of cyclical companies, we want structural growth companies. We would want to stay away from extremely deep cyclicals or companies which are experiencing significant fluctuations in their end product prices, so on and so forth. We also intend to follow a valuation framework, which we would be calling as the fair value approach. And we think it's fairly robust and comprehensive. We've also been working on some back-tested evidence for this process, because we want to stay have a confidence pretty high even in periods of temporary underperformance. So we did a study in the Indian market to see what has worked in the last 20 years in the markets. And the results clearly confirm what we already know, right? That good quality companies which are growing at a reasonable pace, and if they are purchased at a reasonable price, there is good alpha creation. We think it's a fairly consistent alpha creation using these three simple factors alone. And in addition, the batting average was also pretty much in favor of the investor. Hence, our confidence in the process which we are following is extremely high.
Sure. For our listeners, batting average actually means, it's a statistical measure of performance, whether the fund is outperforming or underperforming benchmark. So, Vinay, interesting, you spoke about fair value approach. Can you elaborate a bit on it? What exactly is this, approach?
Sure. So, Ankit, as we have just been discussing, we have incorporated this very unique approach to valuation. This approach is also very theoretically robust, and it has been tested in live markets. So it's not just theory, by the way, it's very well tested in practice. It has produced very strong and good results, and hence it is serving as a very strong decision support system tool. So this framework, which we have been calling as fair value approach, is very comprehensive, and it looks at a lot of factors, including returns on equity, the earnings growth of a company, riskiness of an underlying business, and the risk-free interest rate in the economy. So all of these factors interact with each other and produce a unique multiple for each and every company. Just like you and I have very unique fingerprints, so do each of these companies have very unique multiples. We then compute fair values of each company in our Fundhouse universe for the next 5 years. And then we look at what is the potential upside we will be making if we buy these companies at current market prices. And we can compare these upsides or the potential returns which we would be making with different opportunities and look at other factors while creating portfolios. Hence, this approach is a fairly robust, comprehensive approach, and we think it gives us our competitive advantage.
So Vinay, interesting, you know, can you elaborate that if you're using fair value approach, how would you, you know, construct your portfolio?
So once we have selected stocks, after filtering them for business quality, earnings growth, management quality factors, we then include these companies in the fund house universe.
Mm-hmm.
And then we create portfolios based on the factors. Like the first one, for example, is valuation. As we just discussed, we look at the potential return for each and every company in the fund house universe for a 5-year period. And then compare which company has a higher potential, and we would want to invest more money in companies which have a higher potential, naturally, right? Then we look at market capitalization. So all things remaining constant, which means ceteris paribus, a company which has a larger or a bigger market cap will get a higher portfolio asset allocation compared with a smaller company.
Sure.
We then look at liquidity. So all companies which are more liquid will have a higher allocation compared to less liquid ones. And then there are other factors like fund mandate, what is the fund house view on sectors, etc. All of these factors are considered while allocating portfolio assets to companies from the fund house universe.
Mm-hmm.
Note that we also keep the sector deviation under control, because our objective is to generate a large and significant proportion of alpha from stock selection. And our desire is that only a minor portion comes from sector allocation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would also want to draw your attention to a very important hallmark feature of portfolios from PGIM India. These portfolios will target a higher and a diversified active share. And this high active share ensures that our portfolios are different from the benchmark. And since the active share is diversified, the volatility on this alpha is also likely to be much lower.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to create portfolios which are true to mandate in both letter and spirit. Mm-hmm. And thus, for example, our core equity products will refrain from taking any cash call at any point of time.
Sure. Yeah. Vinay, there's a saying, you know, all of life is the management of risk and not its elimination. While chatting with you, it seems to be there is a huge emphasis, you know, on risk management framework and also bringing in a certain dynamism of alpha orientation, you know, through the style of portfolio construction. So can you just throw some light on that?
Sure. So Ankit, the overall idea is that we cannot deliver performance and returns by avoiding risk.
Right.
We will have to manage risk in a way which gives us risk-adjusted performance over a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Our risk management, in fact, starts from stock selection stage itself. You know, we avoid businesses which are poor businesses and poor management, right? We just discussed a few minutes back that that's part of our investment process. So the stock selection stage itself eliminates some of the landmines like this. We then, while creating portfolios, construct it in a manner which also reduces risk. Like, for example, we emphasize on diversification as a measure to reduce risk. We also have controlled sector deviation so that few decisions on sector calls, etc., do not have a material impact on the overall portfolio alpha. In fact, we also apply some qualitative filters, like, for example, company is having positive operating cash flows in at least 7 out of previous 10 years.
Right.
Based on our study, this kind of an quantitative filter actually results in elimination of many potential landmines. So right. These are some of the things which we incorporate in our portfolios to manage risk rather than avoid the risk.
Right. Vinay, you mentioned one of the big learning that, you know, quality compounders, if you have been bought at a reasonable price, deliver wealth creation over market cycle. What are the other key learnings of, market, over the last 2 decades of your experience?
So I think you're right, Ankit, that my biggest learning has been that good quality companies which are growing at a good pace actually do significantly better than companies which have either low growth or have mm-hmm. poor quality business.
Right.
In fact, growth and quality are significant determinants for valuation. So if we combine quality and growth, this creates a very potent combination for generating value over a long period of time.
Sure.
Also, what I've learned is that markets are reasonably very efficient over a short period of time, which means you cannot make money by trading in the market by having a very short-term horizon. Like, you know, for example, you may buy a company which is likely to report a very strong growth in profits over the next 6 months. I think if you would want to do that, the stock price would have already built in the expected growth. And hence, even if the company actually delivers on that expected growth, you would not make much money on this trade. So your only source of inefficiency and edge comes in when you expand your investment horizon over a longer period, extending it at least beyond 3 years. So according to me, you as an investor can significantly expand your edge by expanding your investment horizon. Spotting opportunities effectively becomes like time arbitrage. You buy and sell stocks from people who have a shorter time horizon and hold on to these trades over a longer period of time. Like, for example, if someone has a very short term horizon, a company is going to report weaker results in the, let's say, next 3 months, 6 months.
Mm.
The stock will be sold by such a person and you will be buying such a stock and holding it over a period of time. And since all of these fluctuations are temporary in the business, you will make money over a longer period of time.
Right.
In fact, what I've also seen is that stock prices track the underlying fair values over a long period of time. Markets are like swinging pendulums. They keep swinging around the fair value, which itself keeps compounding upwards. And hence, our job as investors, it's not just to look at the fluctuations in this market price, but also to keep a very clear hawkeye on the underlying fair values.
You know, given the framework you mentioned, Vinay, which are the PGIM funds, you know, especially on the equity side, follow this?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question, Ankit. Actually, I just want to clarify that as a fund house, we want to keep a very superior investment process. And when you are a process-driven fund house, all the funds are like its own babies. All the funds will be utilizing the same process as the central mothership.
Right.
Hence, also the funds from the fund house must demonstrate the qualities and capabilities of the process, and the investors are ideally going to get a consistent experience from investing in PGIM branded funds.
Sure. So, Vinay, given the market valuation which you spoke of right now, where do you see best opportunities and which sectors, you know, would you want to be, you know, on the overweight side?
Right. So actually, the sector which is doing very well today, in fact, is in a Goldilocks-like scenario, is financials. And within financials, most of the good, well-run banks and NBFCs are doing very well as far as business is concerned. They are moving more towards very granular, retail-focused lending books and are also maintaining very good, robust asset quality at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So while the growth expectations remain strong for this sector, valuations are still reasonable, making it a very attractive opportunity. The next sector which we like is healthcare. This was the darling of the market during COVID and it had outperformed significantly. However, after COVID waned and the pandemic faded away, most of these companies started giving up the non-recurring part of the business which they had experienced during COVID. And the market also punished the sector for that. We think that punishment was too much and hence we looked at various segments of the market and invested in segments like hospitals and India-focused prescription companies. And we think that this sector has a particularly very strong tailwind from a structural perspective. And hence, many companies in this sector are key overweights for us. And then lastly, the sector which we also like is consumer discretionary. And within this, we particularly like quick service restaurants and auto ancillaries. Since we are talking about overweights, I think we should also talk about underweights.
Yeah, actually.
Sectors which we don't like. So some of the sectors which we actually do not like much and we are underweight are commodity sectors, as there are limited number of good companies which satisfy our investment framework. Having said that, still within the sector, within the material sector, we have exposure to few companies in the cement sector and specialty chemical space.
Okay.
We are also underweight the IT sector, as the customers of these companies continue to experience a painful environment, which we think will spill over to companies in the sector. Having said that, clearly the valuations of this sector have corrected, and we are keeping a close watch on this sector for the future.
I think that's a comprehensive update on, you know, sectors. Just to, you know, summarize for our listeners, we use fair value approach, and there are four parameters which we look at for filtering stocks, like return on equity, earnings growth, riskiness of business, and risk-free rate in the economy. We compute our own fair value of the market. And on that basis, if one looks at medium to long-term perspective, which is 3 to 5 years, equities can still generate strong returns for investors. On the sector front, we continue to like financials, healthcare, quick service restaurants, and auto ancillaries. Thank you, Vinay, for sharing your thoughts on how the portfolio and processes, you know, being followed and constructed at, you know, our end, along with your outlook on sectors. Any last message for our listeners, Vinay, from you?
Yeah, I think I would just recommend investors not to look at market fluctuations. Keep your focus on your financial goals. Listen to your financial advisor's advice, and stay invested in the markets for long periods of time to get the full benefit of equity, because equity investment for short periods of time can be risky, but for long periods of time can be extremely good. Yeah, that's what I wanted to say.
Thanks, Vinay, for the last bit. Thanks, everyone, for joining us on PGM India Insights. I'll catch you on the next podcast soon.
Well, that was a very insightful conversation indeed. Lots more of these joining you in the coming episodes of PGM India Insights, our very own podcast series. That's a wrap on this one, everyone. Stay tuned to get more insights in the future.
Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully.
You're listening to the PGM India Insights podcast series by PGM India Asset Management.